And ready to go. Hot Mic with Hunt and Withrow. Glad you're with us. Outkick.com/watch is where you can stream the show live. And, of course, on YouTube for all the clips and post-show content. So just subscribe to our channel. Chad, we've got John McClain coming up later this hour. Plus, Brendan Haywood will be on the call for a handful of these NCAA tournament games. And we look forward to getting the former Tar Heels perspective of how we should fill out our bracket. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Hutton. Excited to be here.
Yes. We've got our final four picks in just a moment as they want to expand the tournament, right? As what's already perfect. Not perfect, whatever's going to happen to the ACC, if things go the way of Florida State and now Clemson. Clemson has joined the mix. They've made it a pairing of programs and universities suing the ACC because of the grant of rights and the exit fees that are involved in this. Chad, they partner now with Florida State, and they're doing it now because just last week and over the weekend, news came out that, the ACC was going to take less in the payout for the expansion of the college football playoff. They were taking a different percentage than the SEC and the Big Ten. And going back to, a year and a half now, 2 years ago, the discussion of Clemson, Florida State, there were a couple of others, but mainly those two programs, wanting more of the media revenue and the payouts across the conference. They were bringing in more. They said they could not compete specifically against some of the bigger programs nationally, namely the SEC and the Big Ten, for the revenue that's coming in through their media contracts, given the fact that they were making considerably less than programs like Alabama and Texas, Ohio State, Michigan, you name them. They're also making less than Vanderbilt, for instance, or Northwestern, and that the future of their program was not going to be on par for much longer. This is after Clemson is in the college football playoff and representing their brand just as much as Alabama was represented in the college football playoff for a number of years. And that's why they've joined this mix. And it's hard not to look at this and think, if they also, in this lawsuit against the grant of rights, if they end up winning this, Florida State and Clemson and whoever else wants to join, we know what happened with name, image, likeness and the Supreme Court case that threatened to rule in favor if things came up and moved forward, that they would still rule in favor of the case it presented. This opens the floodgates in a very similar fashion where the power to can now pick and choose who they want based on precedent. This is massive. And this is coming from two programs that signed the grant of rights, two universities that signed into this grant of rights deal that runs through, 2032, I believe, 2033. Exit fees around, $160 million, and they're suing to get out of it. If they win, what does that mean for the rest of the conference? That means whoever's left, they're going by the wayside the same way the Pac-12 did.
I'm no attorney, Hutton, but I'm having a hard time conceptualizing how exactly they win this lawsuit because of the very reason of what you just said. They signed it. The grant of rights was before them. And when they signed it, everyone thought it was a great deal for the ACC. Boy, they are protected through 2036. No matter what happens, they're guaranteed to make a lot of money through ESPN and everyone else. And this is a great deal for the ACC. Well, it turns out, because of a shifting landscape, because of the rise of the SEC and the Big Ten as the two dominant powers over all of college sports, suddenly it's not a good deal at all. In fact, it almost looks unlawful when you compare that to Big 12 and what the Pac-12 was and Big 10 and SEC and their exit fees and everything else. But now the argument is, hey, I know we signed this piece of paper, but now looking at it, it's unfair and it's costing us a lot of money, and the ACC should just do the right thing and let us leave for nothing because we got to look out for ourselves and they're hurting our ability to look out for ourselves. I don't know what case they have. I understand being pissed off. If I'm Clemson and Florida State, I'm looking around and thinking everyone else is getting not a piece of the pie. They're eating the whole damn apple pie. That's what the SEC and the Big Ten's doing. We're not even getting a sliver of it over here in the ACC. And it's because of this thing that while I signed it, is now very unfair and it's holding us back financially. I don't know what the legal argument is, other than you're just kind of throwing a dart up against the wall and hoping that it sticks. So this could be huge if any judge grants them what they seek. But Hutton, I don't understand how they're going to fight this legally, given that it's a contract they signed as a member of the ACC.
The Texas and Oklahoma had their exit fee reduced, and they could always point to that. That one was around $130, $140 million. They had it reduced up around $100 to leave a year early. And they're doing just that by starting in the SEC this fall, whenever kickoff time rolls around. But I think also what Clemson in this lawsuit is stating, filed by the plaintiffs, Clemson, through this law firm in Columbia, the ACC has publicly asserted that it owns the media rights of member institutions to home football games through 2036, even if the institution ceases to be a member of the conference. That's part of this. Is they do not own their claim is no. If we pay the buyout, you don't own the rights to our property, our intellectual property.
Is what they're saying. Maybe they have success in arguing that is unlawful. You can't put something unlawful into a contract. So even if they sign the contract, which now looks really dumb of Clemson and Florida State, but even if they did, if there's something unlawful in the fine print, a judge could come in and overrule that and say no, you can't hold them to that. I don't know if it's unlawful or not,
right.
But maybe that's what they're arguing with that one little part of it.
And they're also pointing to the other schools that have left. And you know, I think the other, it's also perception, I think, in this, and just reading through some of the quotes from the document, it's also the perception of, well, it's hindering negotiations to do what other institutions did. To me, it sounds like they have been talking behind the scenes with either the SEC or the Big Ten. And they need to get their legal, they need to sort out whatever this language is confusing and make sure if they pay the buyout, they're off and running. And I think that's part of it. They're considering doing that just like Florida State would love to. And Florida State, man, based on the contract that they're handing out to coaches and, you know, Norvell's getting upwards of $10 million a year, you've got them jumping right back in and suing the ACC. They said they didn't want distractions. That's why they didn't do it last August. And then as soon as the season was over and they didn't make the playoff, they jumped right in, despite not wanting distractions. Clemson just started spring practice as well.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be any type of distraction for the players or coaches.
I
want to
hear
what
Dabo says about it.
Yeah, I don't see it as a distraction for the teams currently, but it's definitely a big possible story to be on the lookout for. So the three main things that Clemson's asking for in this lawsuit, and this is directly from the legal paperwork, and it's in an article written by Glenn Gilbo at Outkick.com right now. I think only one of the three to me sounds reasonable that they're going to get or could get through their legal work, and that is number one, enter a judgment declaring that the media, this is what they're asking from a judge, enter a judgment declaring that the media rights agreement are limited to only those rights needed for ESPN's agreements and do not include Clemson's games after it leaves the conference. Clemson already throwing out the shot saying, we're going to leave. It's just a matter of when and how. So after we leave, you don't have the next media rights deal. That's one I feel like maybe they could argue properly and win that judgment on that one. The next two, I think, are a stretch, quite frankly. Because number two is, enter a judgment declaring that the withdrawal penalty is void as an unconscionable and unenforceable penalty, the enforcement of which would violate public policy, and Clemson is not required to pay the $140 million. To that, I would say, you signed the paperwork. You saw what the buyout was to leave. You knew what the grant of rights were. So I don't know how now suddenly we're supposed to void this contract you signed as unconscionable and unenforceable. And three, this is what Clemson wants, is for a judge to enter a judgment declaring that Clemson does not owe any fiduciary duties to the ACC and has not breached any legal duty or obligation it might owe to the ACC by filing this lawsuit. That is what Florida State was unable to do. Why? Because Florida State's being sued by the ACC right now for breaching their contract and breaching their fiduciary responsibility by suing their own conference. So again, I don't see that as something that a judge is going to declare. If the ACC wants to countersue Clemson for breach of contract right now because they sued them, they could, just like they sued Florida State. So I see all of this as something, Hutton, that could be very big. And certainly we now know what we all thought to begin with, that both Florida State and Clemson want to bolt to get to a better situation. But I see it right now as sort of a big nothing burger. Because, well, I don't know how they're getting out of their own grant of rights they signed.
I don't take it as nothing because of the timing of this. I think this is all a part of a big negotiation, just like we saw with Texas and Oklahoma. Because what they're asking for, at the end, they're going way over the top. And at some point, if you compromise, you meet in the middle where the conference gets money. But they know that if they and Florida State bolt the ACC effectively, they're losing out. And I think the timing from Clemson's perspective to join in on this is interesting because Clemson is a part of the ACC and that conference just took less to continue with the college football playoff as the Big 12 did, knowing that survival was based on following along with whatever was presented from the Big 10 and the SEC. They're taking roughly 22, the SEC, each SEC or Big 10 program that makes the college football playoff, the payout is roughly $22 million. Compared to the ACC's representatives, will get paid around $14 million. The Big 12's taking around $12 million.
Yeah, but
and they're taking less, and I think because of that, now is the time if you're going to bolt and try to give them. Now's the time to know. Hey, you're already taking less if you want to reduce the money from our what we should be getting, which is equal, and we're not. We're not viewed as the equal conference to the Big Two, the Power Two. So. Might as well go now and try to reduce the buyout just like we saw from the other programs, Texas and Oklahoma.
But Texas and Oklahoma never sued the Big 12.
Well, they didn't have to.
Right. So I think this is a bit more than just a negotiation. They negotiated and they got out. And the Big 12, in part, I don't know why they did, quite frankly. I would have held them for every penny. If I were the Big 12, I guess they were just being really nice. But the Big 12 also had a card to play. They were going to go get the Pac-12 schools they wanted and right. continue to exist as a conference.
Yes.
The ACC has no more cards to play. They've added Stanford and Cal and SMU and the only teams even remotely worthy of adding to their conference. I would argue even those schools aren't really that worthy and aren't going to add a lot right. to their conference or their money, and we're seeing that now. So,
but
you're playing chicken with a desperate man right now, and the ACC is desperate. So I don't see anything that is giving them any inclination to bend or negotiate with Clemson or Florida State. My stance, if I'm the ACC, would be you sign this contract. If you want to bolt, you got to come up with more money than God to do so. And we're still going to hold your rights moving forward because you signed this contract that is terrible for you now.
The only thing they have,
but you're going to have to do it
against them is what the threat of losing in court. And if they do that, they're dead. That's why you would negotiate.
I don't know the threat. We need to get a lawyer talk about it, like someone who knows about rights.
Even if they reduce the buyout, even if they reduce the exit fee. See, Texas and Oklahoma just said we're going to pay it, and they announced that they were leaving for the SEC,
and they got out a year early.
That's why it was they negotiated that reduced payment.
But again, like
they were going to pay it.
Let's work on getting a legal expert on because someone has to answer this question for me. Because it's so much money, it's unlawful. Like, how is that? You knew it when you signed it. Right? Again, I am Chad Withrow. I am arguing on behalf of the ACC right now. And if I'm an attorney, I'm saying, you saw this. We didn't manipulate the numbers. You signed this grant of rights deal. You knew what it was going to be. You signed it with no intention of leaving this conference. Now that you want to leave the conference and everything around us has changed, you want to rewrite the rules and now argue that something you willfully signed
right.
is unlawful
voluntarily.
And unenforceable. There is no way in hell I'm afraid of losing that in court if I'm the ACC and I'm buttoned up. So I think they fight this to the death. I think they countersue Clemson the same way they countersued Florida State because Clemson's asking for a summary judgment from a judge to say essentially – you can't sue us for breach of contract, even though we're breaching contract by suing.
Well, but Clemson's also, the threat is we're going to pay the fees to exit the conference, meaning we're no longer legally bound by this contract.
And that may be one part that they can get away with if they can prove any part of that grant of rights
and
is on its face unlawful.
And does that mean that other programs would also have that opportunity if they were to win that area? And to me, I take this as also – not only did the ACC agree to take less in the college football playoff moving forward that goes through 2031 and was signed for $7.8 billion today, finalized by ESPN to own those rights, Chad, and they can still sell those rights and they can lease out these games, these bowl games. But also, does it mean that Clemson and Florida State have been approached and in these talks with other conferences, namely the Power Two? Does it mean that they're getting some pushback on that one area of this contract, the grant of rights? I take that as the SEC or the Big Ten hesitant, if this is going on behind the scenes, hesitant to move forward, because why would you want Florida State or Clemson if you don't own the media rights to those two schools based on this grant of rights?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the SEC or Big Ten or both just saying, you've got a terrible contract. You got to figure that part out.
But the contract is with ESPN, if it's the SEC.
Yeah, we'll talk business is what I'm saying. They're saying you got to get out of this whole legal entanglement you've gotten yourself into, and then we'll be willing to add you. I think they'd be crazy not to. And they probably likely would add those two schools.
This is also what we don't know. What if ESPN has some out? They're in partnership with the SEC. They're getting what they want here. You know, like specific to the brands they want. And the legal rights based on the...
I don't know how ESPN...
The media rights would be the media rights for ESPN.
Yeah, but they also have the ACC.
I know, yeah, but the grant of rights is with them so that... That's what the ACC is trying to hold, or the media rights. But that contract is also signed by the partner. It's not signed by the future partner.
I just don't understand how... I really think that Florida State and Clemson are doing what they feel they need to do to get in a better spot. I understand the motivation. Someone is going to have to show me where someone held a gun to their head and made them sign that contract. And where there's some crazy, an out. I mean, ESPN signed it too. Does ESPN get an out for the college football playoff too if they decide it's too much money 2 years into it? I just don't think that exists.
Oh, the out is always the buyout. That's the out.
I think they're bound to it. But even that, this is the last stand for the ACC.
Yeah.
They are either going to get cent of the money from these two schools, plus future media considerations when they join the SEC or the Big Ten, and they will use that money to go do something to try to survive, or they will die. Well, I think this is it for them, and if I'm the ACC, I am holding firm that they signed the contract, and this is what the contract states.
Yeah, and what they know is they're already going to get more, even with because the ACC agreed to take less, you know? And they knew that if they didn't, they were going to be left out. And Clemson knows that if the ACC fights back on anything moving forward, they're going to be left out.
Yeah, look, they absolutely sealed their fate when they signed to a lesser percentage as a lower three conference.
Precedent. Yeah,
there's the Big Two now, SEC and Big Ten, and then you have everything else behind that. And ACC now is in that group of everything else behind that. They're in lockstep with the Big 12. Let's say in college football, as that next group. If they didn't get anything from Florida State or Clemson and they left, that would seal their death certificate.
Or if it's just
not
lowered.
Just them with the Big 12. They're below the Big 12 at that point.
Yeah, but Clemson and Florida State, if they're on par with what Oklahoma and Texas is paying, even if it's lowered, you just reach that threshold and that gets you in. As long as the rights go with them.
Yeah, I think it's way more, and that's why they're saying it's unlawful. Unconscionable that they're asking that, even though that's in the contract.
There's plenty of talks. The talks were pretty simple for the SEC and Big Ten with them. Hey, Sankey, Petiti, what do you want? Because we want to come with you. Because we know if we don't, you're going anyway. With a different contract for ESPN and the college football playoff, with a different version of what we have.
Yeah, I'm hearing from a lot of Clemson people that's like, oh my gosh, we're doing it. We're going to defeat the ACC, and we've done it, guys. We're getting out. And I'm thinking, this is not Tennessee versus the NCAA. When everyone saw Donde Plowman's response and said, she's making a lot of logical points here. They've got them right where they want them now. This makes no sense on the NCAA's perspective, right? To me, this is not that.
Well, what it could be, though, is, hey, you stay, and we're giving you a larger chunk of whatever this is from the college football playoff payout to the conference, which is what they want. They were saying that at spring meetings a year and a half ago.
And look, I think the moment you sue your own conference because you're so desperate to leave, I think you're past the point of return. So I think even if the ACC thought, I can go back and negotiate and say, hey, we'll give you that bigger percentage, even though North Carolina and Duke and NC State and everywhere else are going to fight us on it, and the rest of our membership will absolutely hate us for doing this, we're going to make those concessions for you two schools. I don't think they're going to do that. But even if they did, it's not going to be enough for Florida State or Clemson, who believe they can walk right over to the SEC or the Big Ten. So they're still going to leave at some point. Now it's about how they're going to leave. And when they file the lawsuit, I think we're going to get a countersuit, and this thing's just going to be hung up in court for a while, costing everyone a lot of money.
And Notre Dame also took less in all that, right? I mean, they're also in partnership with the ACC. Not a voting member, but in partnership. Oh, yes, they are a voting member, actually. There's also pissed off Florida State. Chad, I've been hesitant to do this, but I'm doing it because I've really enjoyed college basketball season. Tournament last year was awesome. I'm taking the bait, and I'm going chalk in my bracket this year. And I'm basing this on odds. I'm just taking the odds of seeing what we saw play out in the regular season continue through this bracket instead of the chaos that we saw last year. I'm not seeing a Florida Atlantic make that same run, or a San Diego State even. Odds since 1985. We've had 38 tournaments. They've been won by just 19 different teams. 23 of the 39 tournaments, they've been won by UConn, Duke, UNC, Kentucky, Nova, or Kansas. Nearly 87% of the last 38 tournaments have been won by a 5 seed or higher. And I'm looking at this, Chad, and I'm thinking, well, I want my team that wins the title, my Final Four, to be a team that is a chance to win the national championship. I'll have greater odds of winning whatever bracket pool I'm in. And this year, we've seen a lot of losses at the top. Number one overall team of the country, lost quite a bit throughout the regular season. But I don't think the cream of the crop in this bracket is going to let me down in the same way we saw the bracket play out a year ago. I don't mind if it happens, but I'm not going to bet on it. I'm going to bet on the top seeds. I've got a few upsets, but not many. You agree or disagree?
Well, who you got? Are we going? You're going to your Final Four now?
Well, that's the
we've or got, we because I want to see who you have first. So you're saying chalk. So you're going all four number one seeds?
No, well, I've
got the Final Four.
I've got one upset, but not until late in this bracket. As far as the Final Four, I've got UConn playing at Arizona. I've got Arizona a 2 seed. That's the lowest seed I have, which will tell you on the opposite side of this bracket, Kentucky and Purdue. With Kentucky being the 3 seed, making the run too, the sharpshooters. But I've got the brands. I'm going with the big brands that you could list on these, you know, percentages that are going to make the run to the Final Four.
I've seen a bunch of actual all chalk Final Fours of all four number one seeds. This might not be a bad year in the tournament to do that. By the way, selection show ratings through the roof, best since 2019. In both men's and women's. So there's a lot of interest in this tournament. And I think a lot of that interest, quite frankly, is about chalk. I think we love an upset in rounds one and two. But I think that there is at least the prediction that you're going to see a lot of chalk get to that second weekend. And that's always good for ratings, I believe. We'll continue to see good ratings with it. I'm about as chalky as you are, Hutton, with my Final Four.
Okay, but I think we have the same champion. I do. I've got UConn and Purdue, 2 1-seeds. In the championship, and Purdue winning the national championship over the Huskies. I'm curious who you have playing Purdue, because you've been high on Purdue and saying this is their year, this is their run. You've been saying that all college basketball season. I'm expecting you to go that same way.
First off, promise we did not check with each other before we filled out our bracket at all, because this is going to look much like Hutton and I wearing the same color shirt when we don't check with each other, that our brains are becoming one and the same. This is bearded Hutton. Apparently, I am beardless Hutton, because my Final Four is shockingly close to Hutton's. Okay. Very chalky, but also, let's face it, it's going to be a winner, the four that I have. I've got Kentucky and Purdue on one side from the South and the Midwest.
Okay.
So just like you on that side of the bracket, I am fearful of Kentucky and their lack of defense at times, but I love the way they shoot the basketball and the way they can score. And I like the way it works out for them with matchups. So I've got Kentucky, Purdue. Other side, I've got Illinois, who just went on a run and won the Big Ten Conference Tournament. And I like Arizona for a second straight year. I had Arizona cutting down the nets a year ago.
Yep.
They lost in round one to Princeton. I think they bounce back this year. Two big bounce backs. Arizona losing last year to Princeton in round one, a 15 seed. Purdue, of course, the ultimate fall in their face moment a year ago, losing to 16 seed Fairleigh Dickinson. And I've got Purdue and Arizona playing for a national championship. And my national champion, Hutton, much like yours,
okay,
the redemption story, Zach Edey. Everyone loves a giant. They always root for Goliath. That's what I've always said. Everybody's going to root for Zach Edey and Purdue. Goliath will win. Purdue, your national champion.
So the David's not winning this
no
fight.
No, David. Apologies to Grambling. I don't think you're gonna slew Goliath in this way in round one, this go around. But we all could have said that a year ago, too.
Chad, so do you have Illinois beating UConn? Or do you have UConn out earlier? Because you said that you're not buying their run.
I have Auburn beating UConn in the Sweet 16. I have Illinois beating Auburn in the Elite Eight to go to the Final Four.
Biggest upset in the first round.
This is where we're going to have some different answers for different things. I did not have a gigantic upset in the first round. In fact, I don't have a 14, 15, or 16 seed winning. Now, I know that's going to happen. Math tells us that will in fact happen, but I just didn't pick any of them. I didn't love any of those picks. There's one that I'm really regretting right now. I'll tell you about soon. I went with Samford, Buckyball, to beat a banged up Kansas team. That's my biggest upset, Hutton, 13 over 4. I've got some 12s over 5s, also multiple ones of those. But my biggest upset is Samford beating Kansas in the first round.
So a 15 winning has happened 11 times.
Yeah.
I actually did not follow something you said before the show. This was already locked in. I have Western Kentucky beating Marquette.
Okay.
And it's based on exactly what you talked about with Kentucky, just shooting the basketball. And no one's mentioning the Hilltoppers. They're always going with, St. Peter's is certainly known. We know the Long Beach State story. And you have South Dakota State against Iowa State. No one knows anything about them, but they're also one of the upset picks if you're going with a 15. That's my biggest upset of the tournament. I do not have them in the Sweet 16. Curious who you do making who you have making the run.
The surprise Sweet 16 run?
Yes.
I've got three of them that I'm going to give you. One is Florida, and I know that's not a popular pick after Han Glotten, their big man, went down with a gruesome injury in the SEC championship game. But I like the way Florida shoots and they score. I agree with Dan Dockich on this point. I think you got to be able to score to advance the NCAA tournament. Teams with great offenses do very well. No shocker there. So I like Florida getting to the Sweet 16. James Madison, I've got them beating Wisconsin and beating Duke to get to the Sweet 16. That's going to be a trendy pick also. And Drake. I love Drake. I watched them in the Missouri Valley Championship game. Looked really good. I've got them beating Washington State and then upsetting Iowa State.
Okay.
There's my two seed going down quickly. Iowa State is a two seed losing to an in-state rival in Drake out of Des Moines in round number two, and I've got Drake advancing to a Sweet 16.
I, like you, have James Madison in my Sweet 16 taking on Houston at that point.
I'm the same matchup.
Okay, then I have Kentucky beating Houston.
I have Kentucky beating Florida in that other Sweet 16 game, and then Kentucky beating Houston.
I have – so my biggest upset, though, is with – let's see. One of them is my answer for the next thing I'm going to ask you. It's Charleston. I've got Charleston beating Alabama and then St. Mary's.
Yeah, and that's a 13 also.
A 13.
Yeah.
The team I wanted to pick but didn't have the guts to do it is Long Beach State with the whole story of Dan Monson, the Big West champs who went on and won the Big West after their coach was fired. Their first time in the tournament since 2012 with a head coach that's been there for 17 seasons. I wanted to go that direction. I did not because I look at Arizona and then probably Nevada in back-to-back games if they were to make that run to get to the Sweet 16. I don't think they do that. I didn't pick them over Arizona. I have Zona in my Final Four.
And I picked two 12 seeds to win. I've got Grand Canyon over St. Mary's, 12 over 5, the Fighting Bryce Drews, and I also took James Madison over Wisconsin. I know you have JMU over Wisconsin. I held firm with San Diego State over UAB. I was tempted by that one with UAB. Andy Kennedy has a great team at UAB this year. I was also tempted a bit with McNeese and Will Wade against Gonzaga, but I like how Gonzaga closed out the season, so I went with the Zags in that one. But two of the four of the 12 versus fives, I picked the 12 seed.
The biggest odds, like the best odds are for a 16 winning this year, it is whoever ends up playing Purdue, Montana State, or Grambling. That is the best odds of the 16 seed. You don't even know which one it is.
Yeah. That's what you're saying, like seeing on Vegas.
Yes. Vegas is saying that for the best odds for a 16 to win.
And that's because we just saw them.
We saw it, but
it happen a year ago.
Yeah, I mean,
and that was the play-in game too.
But they're also saying
FDU played into that and had the one extra game and then went in and beat Purdue.
They're also saying that it's they're telling us that the idea that they could face the most pressure to win that game.
Yeah,
I think they're going to beat them down, whoever it is.
I think so too,
based on how they play. There's your winners. And your winner.
Our biggest...
our winner.
Buyer's remorse, Hutton, for me.
Yeah.
The one I just can't get myself to pull the trigger on.
Yes.
But I want to badly, is the one you picked. Western Kentucky over Marquette. Marquette is down, possibly Tyler Kolek, their leading scorer. Their big man went down with 9 minutes left in the Big East Championship game and did not return. They've got another guard who has an injury who is questionable. Now, Shaka Smart is saying, hey, they're going to have to saw their legs off to not play in the NCAA tournament. We expect all of them to play. And maybe all of them play and they play fine and there's no issues. But I think that line is like 13 or 13 and a half now. That's a small line for a 15-2 game with Western Kentucky and Marquette. I really want to pick the Hilltoppers.
It's hard to.
I cannot bring myself to do it, though.
The one game I was watching from the hype was UConn-Marquette. And we saw how that result. Well, I wasn't watching for very long. Based on how I have that in my head, ingrained in my head. Also, what happened with Western Kentucky during the regular season.
Yeah. But regardless, I have Florida beating the next team anyway, Marquette or Western Kentucky.
I'm with you on that would be buyer's remorse. Mine, Long Beach State. You like Grand Canyon. I wish I would have had the guts to pick them too. There you go. The best brackets. We'll be able to compare with
those are the winners
with Clay and Buck as well coming up. Buck's.
I saw that. We got to get Bucks. Clay and Buck's bracket.
Yeah, but we do. Buck's filling out a bracket for the first time ever.
I don't understand how that's possible.
I
get that people have different experiences from me growing up, but someone who's roughly our age, that has just never by accident picked up a bracket or been handed one and said, oh, this will be fun. I'll go through and do it. I mean, my 8 and 4-year-old daughters are dying to fill out a bracket. They love to do it every year in the family bracket, and they just pick whatever they want, but they've done it already.
This tracks, but for Buck not filling a bracket, I witnessed his first ever college football game, which was in 2021, Alabama hosting Ole Miss. That was also fish-out-of-water moment for him, going into a game, experiencing all of it combined.
It was the equivalent of Neil Armstrong walking on the moon when he went to Tuscaloosa, you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Same shock and awe?
Yes. It was interesting just to watch and observe. The grandeur that he was witnessing for the first time. He gets to do this as well. It's unfortunate he probably isn't able to unfold a newspaper and do this by hand either.
Yeah, that time has passed. Yep. Unfortunate for him.
LeBron and J.J. Redick are announcing their new podcast. LeBron's had The Shop. I believe it's on HBO.
Yeah.
Showtime, HBO,
it was,
whatever.
Yeah, it was on HBO.
The Shop. And, of course, Redick has his podcast as well. Mind the Game is going to be the name of this. And as far as the details of it, they say it's more than just basketball. I would assume it would be.
I think it's just basketball. It's called Mind the Game, but the description from LeBron James, he spoke to Andrew Marchand, was, we're doing an X's and O's podcast and we're not getting involved in culture wars. This is exactly what everyone that screams LeBron James wants from LeBron James, right?
Well,
stick to the game, stick to sports. This is what he's saying he's going to do with his podcast.
I don't see how he does that.
I mean, maybe not, but I'm telling you what his idea is with
it. He also said he was reading those books.
I was half expecting LeBron saying, he's going to solve racism with this new podcast, but instead they're going to talk about the proper pick and roll techniques in the podcast. And LeBron said, I do things that I feel like me and my friends would want to listen to, and this is something we want to listen to, and this is more about basketball X's and O's and, for lack of a better term, inside baseball, about the game of basketball. So, great, I guess. I don't know that they'll stay away from topics, but who does at this point in time?
Hopefully they talk more hoops than just the NBA. Then it'll be extremely popular.
Look, if it is – if it's the way LeBron describes this podcast, it could be an amazing reference for young players to listen to and get more insight into the game one of the greatest of all time.
And LeBron's got his own production company, much like Peyton.
Yeah, I mean, I look, if that's what it is, I'm not going to listen to it. So if you listen to it or watch it, you can let us know if he sticks to it. But yeah, I mean, I think that could be a great resource for young players if it's LeBron James and J.J. Redick talking fundamentals of basketball and technique.
Speaking of Omaha Productions, they're back. They've been recruiting to bring back quarterback across the league. Well, one man's trash, another man's treasure. We get receiver now, with multiple sites saying that,
including one tight end.
One tight end. There are plenty of names on here that I will be watching to see how they are behind the scenes, because we get to see if there is a Kirk Cousins among this group. Devontae Adams, Justin Jefferson, George Kittle is the tight end, Deebo Samuel, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. I love this idea. And Dave, you were saying before the show, like, I can't wait for the series punter
That'll be great.
To come out through.
Those guys will have some personality.
NFL
There's no doubt about that.
Omaha. Oh, this group.
Holder.
That backup.
Yeah. Ass back. Coming soon to Netflix. Coach runs on the field and immediately you say, you run on the field and coach says, get your ass back.
Quality control.
That's the special teamer.
Yes.
That's what I want next. Manager.
of this group, Chad, who's the one that you point to and say, this? I think it's St. Brown that will be the star of this. He's already really good on the 33rd team.
I think all are interesting. It's really hard to pick. I mean, Devontae Adams is an established, career superstar player. Justin Jefferson may be the best receiver in football right now. He's very young. Yeah. George Kittle's a great tight end with a huge personality. And a good-looking wife that I'm sure will be a big part of it, too.
Yeah.
Deebo Samuel, a do-it-all type player. Amon-Ra St. Brown, a fun guy. I mean, this is good stuff. I got no objection to these types of peeks behind the curtain guys like this. This will be fun.
I immediately think, if we're just talking ball, if you mentioned Kittle, I think Kelce. If you mentioned Kelce, I think Kittle is the top two players. He now has a chance to get the Kittle brand tight end you and all of that out there. Just no Taylor Swift.
Now, because it's an Omaha production, one thing I will assume about this show is that they will not be trying to solve racism the way certain things try to solve it. It's not going to be any bigger cultural context.
Right.
Peyton Manning is very much I am a down-the-middle guy. I want to entertain people regardless of ideology.
Just like Jordan.
And that's what he's going to do. Yeah, and that's Peyton Manning. So there are no assumptions about this one the way we have certain assumptions about LeBron James. But maybe LeBron's rebranding. Maybe this is going to be straight down the middle X's and O's of basketball when it's all said and done, and he's not going to be lying about it.
Sports Illustrated.
I will be watching this show, though. I won't be listening to LeBron's podcast.
Watch it. Sports Illustrated is saved. So you've got...
It's done? It's saved?
Minute Media that has reached a 10-year publishing deal to take over for the Arena Group. Of course, we've discussed the Arena Group owned by the guy who owns 5-Hour Energy. And you've got now the Minute Media that also owns Players Tribune and Fansided. 10-year agreement with Authentic Brands. Of course, this could ultimately help save, reported, half of the 80 staffers that were laid off with this. Hope so. And here's hoping that the brand itself gets back to the brand instead of whatever version it was for Sports Illustrated whenever it folded with the Arena Group, with missing payments.
Good news that it's not like the Deadspin story where it's someone acquired and immediately fired every employee.
Yeah.
So this publishing agreement doesn't include that. Michael Fabiano, who's terrific with us, he's a Sports Illustrated employee.
Yep.
I believe he's still there. Pat Forty is still at Sports Illustrated. Honest question, who do you know still associated with Sports Illustrated?
You name them.
Those are the only two names that I can immediately say they're Sports Illustrated people.
Now you may get more of the Players Tribune names and brands, right? With everyone writing.
Could be a crossover, for sure.
Could be.
It's also no longer a journalistic company at that point. If you just have players writing their own editorials.
Sure.
As part of your company. I mean, I don't know that any of that matters anymore either.
And it's also...
it's a blend of the two, it's definitely a different tenor of the company.
10-year agreement with an option to take it to 20, so a 10-year option as well. Plus, Authentic Brands gets a equity stake in this through, I'm saying, in the company of Minute Media. So it's based out of London. Good. I hope that many of the staffers also are able to stay.
European company also bought Deadspin.
Yeah, that's right.
Hacked everyone out of the company. Trevor, and now a British company is buying Sports Illustrated.
Trevor Bauer is back to pitching on the mound against the Major League Baseball talent that he should be pitching for right now for a team as a major leaguer. He's teaming up with Diablos Rojos.
Is this the team Kenny Powers played for?
Maybe.
When he had a short stint in Mexico?
He just got done pitching for Asian Breeze.
La Flama Blanca?
Faced the Dodgers.
That's going to be Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, faced the Dodgers.
I immediately thought about Trevor Bauer running a cockfighting ring in Mexico while playing for this team and being hailed as La Flama Blanca the entire time.
The pitching needy staffs are going to he's going to be signed. Faced the Dodgers. He KO'd 4 of 12 batters faced. Hit 99 on the clock. You've also got him. He's going to be pitching for Diablos Rojos, Chad, April 8th through May 8th, if in fact he needs to stay in shape. There you go.
I do not understand how the guy's not already on a roster.
He's got to be. With all the think about the pitching issues for these. I mean, he's facing the Yankees, by the way. Tell me.
Yeah,
how.
I don't know how it's not already happened, though, is my point.
I'm with you. Chad, coming
up. He's got to go to Mexico to prove himself.
John McClain will join us. The very latest across the NFL, the latest signings, and what it looks like now with the theory that Minnesota's looking to move up with two first-round picks after a trade with the Houston Texans. That's next here on Hot Mic. Sixth and Peabody, our location with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. Glad you're with us. Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow rolls on here at outkick.com/watch, and it rolls on with John McClain, who is filled with knowledge across the National Football League and also with predictions when it comes to making the Super Bowl, who may win, who may not.
John, NCAA tournament, I'm sure he's got his Baylor Bears cutting down the nets in Phoenix as well.
Who do you have, John, as your champion? And go ahead and give us your final four in your bracket.
First of all, looking at Sports Illustrated, my favorite baseball writer, Tom Verducci,
yes.
College writer, Pat Forte, and I think one of the all-time great writers of features, Greg Bishop, they're all there. There's still a lot of really good writers at Sports Illustrated. I'm glad for that news. I know it's not going to be Baylor. I'd like to see Baylor at least get to the Sweet 16, but they haven't played well coming into the tournament. I'm amazed at all the disrespect for the University of Houston. They lost one game to Iowa State. I heard a national guy talking about they hadn't played well at the end of the season. I'm thinking, yeah, they won only by 26 in the conference semifinals.
Well, they beat Kansas by 40, right, towards the end of the season.
Before that, and they got beat by Iowa State. Iowa State is a dark horse to me to win the national championship. Now, everybody knows UConn should win it, but I'm amazed. I've read everything I can get my hands on, watched all the shows, how few people have Houston go into the Final Four. And it may be right, but they got a really good team. Got a great coach in Kelvin Sampson. They play defense as good as anybody, really athletic. And so if it's not Baylor, I'd love to see Houston, but don't sleep on Iowa State, which has played very, very well down the stretch. I watched them beat Baylor, watched them beat Houston, and they are peaking at the right time. So, but I'm going to say Houston just because I don't want to pick UConn.
Okay.
Hey, John, I know, like you said, you watch all the shows. I watch all the shows too. It was a bummer not to see Greg Gumbel there on the selection show. Such an institution with him and his voice with NCAA. It's synonymous with March Madness, the NCAA tournament. I know they said that he's got a family medical issue happening, so he couldn't be there for the selection show. But I love events like this that you have long-standing people that have been a part of it that you can trace back decades to your memory bank about that voice or that person being right there with that event. I think Greg Gumbel's one of those guys.
One of my people that I knew growing up, Frank Fallon, voice of Baylor Bears for 44 years. He was the voice of the Big 12 in the arena, the PA man. and Frank did it for years. You'd always hear him go, let's go over to Frank Fallon for the introductions. And then Frank died of Parkinson's disease. We're going to miss Jim Nance. I've known Jim since he was at University of Houston. And he came to watch U of H because that's his alma mater. And he can be a fan now. And it's going to be weird to not see him doing it. Yet he's still doing golf and he's still doing football. But now he can just be a cheerleader. He was not bashful about being a University of Houston grad and fan. But when he came to the last home game, he was wearing Cougar red like everybody else and sitting down there with Hakeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler and some of their greatest players. But I'm with you. You settle in on something, and when it changes, somebody that you like and respect and just are used to hearing, and when they're not there, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, what happened?
John? Justin Fields traded to Pittsburgh. The Steelers flipped their quarterback room into Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. What do you make of the news over the weekend and the new quarterback room in Pittsburgh compared to what Chicago got in return for their number one over their first round pick recently?
The Bears traded him to the Steelers because that's where he wanted to go, and I don't blame him because Pete Carroll didn't want Russell Wilson. Sean Payton didn't want Russell Wilson. Now everybody's acting like he's the answer to the Steelers' prayers for a starting quarterback. I just don't see it. What is Mike Tomlin going to get that Sean Payton and Pete Carroll couldn't bet? They're all Hall of Fame coaches. So I think Justin Fields is going to be playing before the season's over. How well he plays, nobody knows. I watch so many people, as I know you guys did, on ESPN and the NFL Network and Fox, all talking about, boy, the Bears were crazy if they didn't keep Justin Fields and trade that pick to get multiple picks because Fields was a franchise quarterback, and now they all got egg on their face. Because if you've got a quarterback for 3 years and people don't know this guy can take us to the Super Bowl, you need to make a move. Trade him. And if you're in a position to take the best player in the draft, in this case, Caleb Williams, you've got to do it. But all this rigmarole about Fields being a franchise quarterback, I think it's been proved what people thought about him.
Yeah, and you know, got so many naming it the top move. It's a top move in terms of buzz. And I do agree with you. I think he's the starter for the longer than Wilson, yes. As far as quarterbacks go, you know the trade that took place between Houston and the Browns pick that they acquired, trading that to Minnesota. Minnesota now with two first-round picks. Are they moving up, and who are they targeting quarterback-wise?
Well, they better go to number four with Arizona, because if they don't trade with Arizona, and they've got J.J. McCarthy targeted, and I think he's way overrated to go that high. It's amazing to me. He was running around and throwing in shorts and a T-shirt, and his stock skyrocketed. I'm amazed at how that happens every year. And why can't you just watch tape of every play of his college career and learn if the guy can play? Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of times when guys fail, it's not their fault. It's the fault of the team that drafted him because they fired people, played him before he was ready. But in this case, we'll see. I think it's because he played for Harbaugh. And I'm guessing if you trade, say, five or six, and then somebody trades with Arizona, you're going to look like an idiot. So if they're going to do it, they better do it with the Cardinals.
Yeah, that big move up. And the Cardinals will be passing on, what, Marvin Harrison Jr., if they did that. How close is the next – how close are the receivers in this first round to Marvin Harrison Jr. if they were to trade out of that spot and give up on Harrison?
Rome Odunze from Washington, Malik Nabers from LSU. You see some like Odunze better, some like Nabers better. They're both supposed to be top 10 picks along with Marvin Harrison Jr. But if you got a chance to get two number ones, maybe a number one next year, I would make the Vikings or anybody else pay dearly to get what they consider a franchise quarterback. And that means you're two ones this year, and you better get a one next year. In essence, you'd be getting two. I love to hear people say, oh, my God, the 49ers gave up three ones to move up to get Trey Lance. Yeah, but they got one in return. So, in essence, it's two. But in this case, you know what the Vikings want to do, and you better twist the screws a little bit to get everything you can get, including if you have to get a pick in 2026.
Chase Young signs a one-year deal with the Saints, John. And maybe this is just people putting reports out there or getting with reporters that did not land Chase Young to spin this narrative. But I'm hearing a lot about him being lazy and taking plays off a lot. And I don't know that I've heard that about him throughout his career. What do you think about this move for the Saints and Chase Young?
Chad, like that first surface back when he was in Washington, he was such a disappointment after his rookie year. He got hurt, and he was not able to come anywhere near being a second overall pick. I'll tell you what, if the reports are true, he got $13 million on a one-year deal based on what he's achieved. I don't know who his agent is, but if I'm a prospect without one, I'm calling his agent. I want to talk to him and have him represent me because he ain't worth $13 million, although he certainly was to the Saints, and that's one reason. Every year, the Saints have humongous salary cap problems, and they have to cut players, extend players to get under the cap because of making preposterous deals like that.
Yeah, and all it really took for me was the 49ers traded a compensatory third round, I think maybe another pick as well. And they did this past season, didn't want him back.
Yeah. Didn't look like it. Made trades for defensive linemen. Didn't look like they had any interest in him at all. And maybe it was his work ethic, but for whatever reason, he was viewed as such a can't-miss pass rusher, and he hadn't come close to living up to that.
No, and of course, I should also mention Commanders declined to pick up his fifth-year option as well.
Yeah, but when I see reports like that, I know he's been a disappointment, but when it's about effort, I always see those reports come out from beat writers of different teams after he signed somewhere else, and not when there's talk about him visiting that team and possibly signing. And then suddenly when he goes somewhere else, like, oh, Team X dodged a bullet with this guy. You don't want to pay him that much money because he takes too many plays off. And I'm thinking, where was all this in the buildup to that?
Well, keep this in mind. If you want to know if he takes plays off and you're a personnel guy or a coach, all you got to do is watch tape of every play of his career, and you can tell if that's true or not. Obviously, Saints didn't think it was true.
John, is it true that the Houston Texans are the most improved through free agency? They have made a lot of legit moves, and I think not just a playoff contender after last year's season, which surprised us. I think they're going to be the talk of the offseason, much like we saw from the Lions a year ago. Have they positioned themselves to be a contender now, John?
Contender for what? The Super Bowl? I don't think so.
As far as the AFC is concerned.
Well, to go to the Super Bowl, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think they surprised everybody. Everything, they played last place schedule. Now they play a first place schedule. Five division winners, counting the Cowboys, and in the odd game with NFC. They have 11 games against teams with winning records, and they play a murderer's row lineup of opposing quarterbacks, and that's why they've made nine moves to add to their defense. But they lost Jonathan Greenard to Minnesota, and they got Danielle Hunter. Everybody with Danielle Hunter is better. But then never seen a team that finishes 11th in defense, goes from 32nd to 6th against the run, and they have three changes in their starting lineup on their defensive line. Jonathan Greenard gone in free agency, tackle Sheldon Rankin's gone in free agency, and they traded tackle Malik Collins, who'd started every game for 3 years, to the 49ers for a 7th-round pick. None of us can figure that one out. And so Danielle Hunter and Danico Autry are good additions, and they're signing these guys, tomato cans, to come in and be part of the rotation. That's why I think with their 2 second-round picks, they're going to be taking a tackle and a corner or a corner and a tackle, and when they get 3rd round, they'll look for offense. Their top receivers, Nico Collins and Tank Dell, went in the 3rd round, so why do they need to go higher? They have got to do more in their defense. But to answer Chad Legs and Jonathan, I just don't think that they're a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Okay.
John, this news just coming down since you joined us from Adam Schefter. Mike Williams signing a one-year deal with the Jets worth up to $15 million. He'll catch passes, we think, from Aaron Rodgers in New York. What do you think about that move for Mike Williams? And is he another one of those players that may be a bit overvalued?
If it's up to, we don't know what the actual contract
could be. A lot of incentives.
Yeah, a lot of incentives. Not smart for him to do it. He's coming off a torn ACL. Obviously, the Chargers thought enough of him as one of the top two receivers for Justin Herbert to give him a big contract, his second one. And at times, he was really good. And if I'm the Jets and I'm as bad as the Jets were without Aaron Rodgers, and they've been spending their money to bring in a lot of veterans who have a lot to prove, like Tyron Smith. Tyron Smith seems to be always hurt, but if he could play 13 or 14 games at left tackle, they'd be getting their money's worth, and all those contracts got a lot of incentives. And when you've got playing time bonuses in there, there's nothing better for a team.
John, over your years covering the league, who's the closest you would say to Rodgers who could, you know, he's running, could run for vice president and be a step away from the presidency?
Oh, I got a better chance of being a multi-billionaire than he was running for
president. I'm not saying on the legitimacy of winning. I'm saying just running as a running mate to a candidate. Is there a name that pops to mind of players you cover?
I mean, there have been some like Bill Bradley played forward for the New York Knicks, won an NBA championship.
Steve Largent is another
senator.
One. Steve Largent. Steve Largent.
Yeah, Steve Largent. Yeah, Steve Largent, who started off with the Oilers, then got traded to Seattle and went to the Hall of Fame. He's a good one. I'm sure there's more. I just can't think of them off the top of my head.
Yeah, John Runyon got into it. I'm saying like in the middle of their career. I guess there's no one's going to be pointing to
Dan Pastorini wasn't presidential enough. I mean, come on. Of all the guys that you've covered, Kenny Stabler wasn't going to be anyone's running mate. Oh, he's somebody's running mate, just not
for
vice president.
They were running mates, just not for politics.
Right, right. Different type of running.
Yes.
Yeah.
John, thank you as always. Always enjoy our chats, and we'll catch up next week.
Guys, thank you very much. I hope you have a great rest of the week.
Yep, same to you.
And
thanks, John.
Go Sic'em Bears.
And good luck with your bracket, same as ours. Same as ours. There's John McClain, and love having him on. Chad, each week.
He mentioned the Baylor Bears. Matt Norlander for CBS Sports every year does an annual check-in with every NCAA tournament coach and gets their favorite band or music act.
Oh, yeah. That's
and the
great
explanation behind it. And just looking through some of them, Scott Drew's was a Christian worship band that I've never heard of, but some of the answers are fascinating.
Is it POD?
To me. Oh, there's a lot of Tupac. There's some Pearl Jam. Dan Hurley is Pearl Jam,
okay,
which I appreciate. I'm trying to think of the one. There was one that was Dave Matthews Band. I'm like, oh, Hutton's going to be a big fan of this guy now. I'll have to go back and look. We'll get some of the better ones, and I'll report back.
Okay, it wasn't anyone SEC related though for DMB. I need to.
He was very much someone of the era.
Okay.
That is around our age or a little bit older that you'd say, yeah, that tracks. I could see them as a Dave Matthews Band fan. Was not Will Wade. What I hate is when the coach clearly is pandering to his recruits.
Yeah.
And they're giving some rapper I've never heard of that I'm sure they haven't either.
Yeah, that's
but their
point.
Team's favorite. I hate that. You could see right through that.
Really, all they got to do is mention Taylor Swift now. You'd be a headline.
Taylor Swift was Mark Pope of BYU.
There you go, Pope.
And he even gave his top five songs. He's a legitimate Taylor Swift fanatic. He's got two daughters who are huge fans.
Well, that's why he's...
And he said, so it's kind of tied to their happiness, too. I listen to it with them.
Most. Yeah.
But, I mean, he was going through deep cuts, and then one song was the extended version, though, not the normal one, was one of his top five songs. Rick Barnes was Carrie Underwood. Was his favorite. Wow. I mean...
There you go, Rick.
Some good ones.
Chad, when we come back, and I apologize. I missed the discussion of Anthony Edwards. We must hit this. This is unbelievable. With a great question you have behind the dunk that we've seen. Also, we also have, and John would have been great to chime in on this, maybe a new James Bond?
Yeah.
Maybe a new James Bond?
There's reports out there that there's an offer has been made.
Okay, I can't wait to hear this. That's straight ahead here on Hot Mike.